everybody, it's Thursday, February 17th, and you're listening to Against the Current, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's News Collective. We aim to bring you an alternative and undercover current affairs coverage from Vancouver and Lower Mainland every Thursday at 3 p.m. We're based on UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. We have a very fun episode for you today, folks, because we're going to be talking about fish mating. And to explore this topic, I sat down with Rena Fan. Rena graduated with a Master's of Science from McGill University, and she's a researcher and extremely interested in exploring the study of animal behavior through the lenses of neuroscience and ecology. She's also a freelance photographer and knows some really, really cool facts about fishes and their social behaviors. So I chatted with Rena to hear about some of these fun facts and hear some really bizarre fish mating stories. And here's our interview. Thanks, Rena, for being on the show today. So just to start off, would you mind introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about what you study and your research and what drew you to this field?
Sure. Yeah. Hi, Trish. Thanks so much for having me. I'm super pumped to be here. So I guess over the last 6 years, I've spent the last 6 years more or less on and off being in fish biology lab, studying fish on boats, in rivers, in the lab as well. I'm 26, so it started when I was in undergrad, and that was my first exposure to fish research. I've always been kind of drawn to anything water related, and especially the cool biodiversity that we find in the oceans and in our lakes and rivers. And so then I went to graduate school at McGill. I did a master's where I studied fish cognition and behavior in the lab. I did it at McGill University in Quebec, and now I live in Vancouver. But just in general, I think that fish are so underrated. I think maybe it's because, you know, when you look into a dog's eyes, you're like, yeah, like I can relate. There's definitely something there. And like, fish are so different from us. But that doesn't mean that they're not interesting and cool and can do have complex social behaviors and interactions. So I really like having just any excuse to really get hype and talk about fish and hopefully make people think that fish are a little bit more interesting than maybe they felt before.
That's so cool. I definitely think that fish are really cool. What sold it to me was Finding Nemo and Dory.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are really cool. And I just wanted to say that your research in general sounds really cool. And since I know nothing about fishes, I love that we have you so you can provide some scientific or some knowledge.
Yeah.
Fish mating.
Yeah, I'm hopeful I can provide some like fun facts. I guess maybe I'll start with like the preface that fish are so diverse. Just as a group of animal, there are over 34,000 species, and about a couple hundred are discovered every year. And fish in particular, like fish species, are very different from each other, more than like, for example, bird species are. So what kind of blew my mind when I first started studying fish was that, like, you think you know what a fish is, right? You're like, okay, there are certain things that all fish do, like they breathe underwater. Surprise, like there are some fish that also breathe air. And then you're like, okay, well, like fish have scales. And like, no, some fish have scales, some fish don't. And then like, you're like, oh, well, okay, well, you know, fish lay eggs. So clearly that's part of the definition of a fish. But then psych, like some fish like give birth to like live offspring, other fish lay like, so like there's almost like more exceptions than there are rules. And so it's really one of those topics where like the more you know, the more you realize that you don't actually do, and like you don't actually know anything. And that's like for me as an individual, but I think that's also true for like humanity and what science knows, and that there's so much like that we don't know about fish in general, and there's things that we learn like every year that kind of baffles like the scientists. And so I think that's also part of what draws me to studying fish and like that incredible diversity, and there's just so many interesting things across the different species.
Yeah, that sounds so cool to be able to learn new stuff like stuff pops up all the time, and then you're constantly learning these new things. And yeah, I feel like other fields can be a bit too static. Since in IR, I study a lot of
Yeah.
history and theory,
That's
which
international relations, right? Yeah.
so old, and I'm like, I don't want to be learning about, I don't know, like this political theory written by some old dude like who lived like 100 years ago. I don't know, but that sounds
Yeah.
really cool to me. But yeah, so I guess my first question to you would be like, I'm aware that, like you said, there's so many different species and like fish, but like, is there a general time period where fish start like generally start mating, or
Yeah, so yeah, again, like very species dependent, but there definitely are species that have like mating seasons. So I guess an easy example that maybe BC residents would be familiar with are salmon runs. And so that's when mature salmon, they'll leave their ocean habitat and a big group of them will together swim back upstream to the freshwater rivers where they were born, which there's a bunch of cool stuff about, like how do they navigate and how do they like find their way back to their birthplace. But yeah, that is like a seasonal event, and that usually it depends even on like the salmon species a little bit, but that's usually in the fall, like September, October to like November-ish.
right.
And that's also like a really important time, obviously, for like bears and eagles and like predators that will feed on the salmon as they're like racing up river to go spawn. And so yeah, so the fall, like our fall, is kind of the salmon season, and they'll reproduce by spawning, which is external fertilization. So once they get to their destination, the females will release eggs, and then the males will release sperm like over the eggs. And what's kind of interesting, and maybe a little sad about salmon, is that they'll like die within a week after they spawn. So that's really like kind of the end of their lives, and that's the cycle kind of starts and ends in that one spot. And so that's like I guess like that's like the climax of their life. No pun intended, but I definitely meant to say that. So yeah, so salmon's an example of like a very seasonal spawning event that also includes some migration. And then there's another example that I like. There's a species called the Nassau grouper, and it's a Caribbean fish that I think lives in the Bahamas and I think off of the Cayman Islands. And they're these medium-sized like reef fish. They get up to about 50 pounds. They're have like very severe underbites. They're like kind of ugly, but they're so ugly that they're cute, or at least they are to me. Like I find very like ugly looking fish and like very weird looking animals. I think that those are really cute. But yeah, they normally live by themselves, and they're these like big like predators. So they're very solitary, but they have a very specific mating period. And so for them, that's December and January, but only on or around the full moon. And so these normally solitary animals, they'll like come together in these huge groups, just around the full moon, and just in those 2 months. But there'll be like hundreds of fish, and they just wait for like when the conditions are just right, and they just have like a big orgy where they it doesn't last very long. I think it only lasts like it's one night of like a lot of fun where they all spawn, and then they go back to their like solitary lives. So I think that's one of the examples of like the most like specific and like precise times of year or like environmental conditions that at least I know about.
Wow, that sounds so cool. Wait, how do they know it's full moon? Like,
That's a very good question. I don't know if that's I'm sure like there people have theories. Just off the top of my head, I think it must have something to do with like environmental cues. Like I guess maybe the full moon, that's when like the tides are the strongest, so maybe they have a sense of like some like the bigger tides are approaching, or maybe it has something to do with like circadian rhythm, like at a full moon, maybe you can like more light penetrates like into the water even at night. So maybe it has something to do with that, but I imagine it has something to do with kind of those environmental cues that then trigger like hormonal releases that then trigger that cascade where like they're like, okay, now is the time to gather to that special spot. So yeah, I'm not too sure, but I think it's probably something to do with either light or temperature, that kind of environmental seasonal variation. But then there are also fish that they don't necessarily have a particular mating season. And the fish that I studied in my master's is the Trinidadian guppy, and they are from Trinidad. So they're like a tropical fish. And I think maybe because there's not that much seasonal variation just in the environment, they're kind of just like mating all year round. And I've spent a lot of hours observing guppies in the lab. And what's interesting about them is that they actually mate by internal fertilization. So contrary to the other two fish that we talked about, which spawn and like they release eggs and sperm, these guys, like it's exactly what they sound like. There's penetration involved. And so guppies are sexually dimorphic, which just means the males and females look different. So the males are small and they're colorful. The females are big and they're kind of just like a beigeish color. And so that makes it really easy to observe like sex differences in behavior. So me having spent many hours of my life watching these fish, it becomes very obvious that males will spend most of their day chasing females. And in contrast, females will spend their entire day snacking and also trying to avoid males, which is very relatable. But at least in the populations that I've studied, they seem to kind of always be mating. And actually, we assume that the females are always pregnant year round. And yeah, like I said, like it's internal fertilization. So the females get pregnant and they give birth to live young. And then what's interesting about them too is that the females, they can also delay fertilization. So if like the environmental conditions aren't right, for example, there's not a lot of like food resources around. I don't think it's like a conscious thing. They're not thinking like, oh, I don't really want to get pregnant now, so I'm not going to. But I think it's more to do with, yeah, like if they're not properly nourished or anything, that won't start the process of fertilization. So there's some control there. But yeah, there's an example of fish that just mate whenever there's enough food and whenever there's a chance to.
Wow. Now I just wish I was a Trinidadian guppy. Like, what the hell? Like,
snacking all day.
Yeah. Jeez. The fact that you can, like, control for, even though, like, you know, it happens, like, today, too. Like, you don't want to get pregnant, but you get pregnant, but you can't support yourself. So,
yeah.
Those situations, that would be so helpful to just be able to delay it for a while until you can.
Yeah, until I have the resources and I'm in a spot. Like, yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're new that, like, yeah, down the line, like, this is something that I would want. And and what's nice, I guess, for them, in my opinion, is that once they give birth to maybe like four or five fry at a time, at least from what I've seen, and then they're kind of just like, okay, like that's it, have fun in the world. They're like pretty independent from the day they're born. So
that's fun. Also, when you were talking about the moon fish, that is so interesting.
Yeah.
The first thought that came to my head was Twilight and like,
yeah.
Twilight and werewolves in general, and like all the teen wolf shows.
That's true. Write this down, whoever's listening. And
yeah, maybe the makers are out of this, literally.
Yeah,
like a werewolf fish or something.
This
like
this is the next Twilight series, next like teen novel romance.
Oh my god, send it to Stephanie Myers right now. She will make another one.
Yeah,
that sounds super cool. And like, so, like, kind of going off of that, my next question was about their age. So, like, what is the typical lifespan of, like, I don't know, the couple of fishes that you mentioned, or, like, in general, and, like, what age do they start mating, if there even is a, like, I don't know
how
it works in the fish
world. Yeah. So, yeah, again, like, I, it's, it's a question that's hard to answer in generalities, because I think anything with fish, it's hard to say in general. So, and I don't really know the specifics of like the fish that I mentioned. I think for guppies, it's a couple of months, I think, and then maybe like their lifespan is 2 to 3 years, but like something along those lines.
Right.
But I thought it'd be cool to kind of look at, there's so much variation. So I thought, okay, what if, let's just see like what the range might be. So I looked up what the shortest and like longest lifespan of fish are. Ah. And so I found that the shortest living fish is not a very well-known one. It's called a sign Iviota. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but they only have they're like the small coral reef fish. I think they're only like 2 centimeters long, and they only live for 8 weeks. So they mature at 4 to 5 weeks old. And so if you do the quick math, like that's only 3 weeks of living as full adult and reproducing. And that's actually the shortest known lifespan of any vertebrate. And I don't know too much more about this fish than that, other than they're never having like real short lifespans.
Oh, that's crazy. I like, yeah. Don't kill a cute little fish, coral reef fish, in like 8 weeks. That's unfair. I feel like small fishes deserve to live longer.
Yeah, I think that's an extreme example. I think like most fish that are like, I think it depends on the size a little bit. I think there's some correlation there with lifespan and size, but I don't know. I would just want to say like fish that get to the size of your hand, like definitely a few years at least, and then lots of other things that might affect age. But then on the other end of the spectrum, we got the Greenland shark, which is a fish. It lives in the Arctic. We have some in Canada, in like the Canadian Arctic. They have the longest known lifespan. They grow to up to over 7 meters long. So they get really big. They're predators. They eat other fish and crustaceans. They get up to 2,000 pounds. Okay. And we think that they might live up to like 500 years or more. And we're pretty sure that they live at least to at least like 250 years, which is crazy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, humans can't even live until like 100. It's like barely even possible.
But yeah,
fishes, they live, oh my God, that's blowing my mind. Wow.
Yeah, that blew my mind too. And so it's interesting because like, okay, that the sign Eviota, like that's like the shortest known lifespan of any vertebrate, and the Greenland shark, they're both fish, but they are the longest known lifespan of any vertebrate, and vertebrate is just like any animal with bones. So most animals that we would think of maybe, but, scientists think that females only reach sexual maturity at 150 years old, which
wow
seems like a lot.
That seems excessive. Like, you have to live until 150 years old to
And I think there are like some theories as to why they why it takes so long for that, but we also don't really know. Like, we only have guesses about how they mate and how they give birth, because they're hard to study. They're rare, and they live in the Arctic,
right?
But I think like part of why we think they might live that long is just like Arctic conditions, which keeps their metabolism really slow. It also has some like anti-cancerous or anti-cell aging effects. Mm-hmm. So I think their life is just, the rhythm of their lives is just much slower, and maybe a few years to them like doesn't feel like a few years to us.
Yeah, that's crazy. Imagine celebrating your 500th birthday. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Like, I think they were saying like some, like the specimen that they used. Oh, and I guess like it might be interesting to know that like the way that they figure out how guess how old a Greenland shark is. It's they use like carbon dating methods that are kind of similar to, I guess, like what geologists use. Maybe a little bit different, but just looking at like the composition of like certain like carbon elements from like skin tissue and stuff. And so, because obviously like no one has been around for like since like the 1600s to keep track of the same individual. And so that's how we've estimated that Greenland sharks have lived for at least 250 plus years, but probably up to 400 or 500. And so that's one of the ways of looking at how old a fish is. And that only works too because with the Greenland sharks, because they've been around for so long. And so you can tell just from like chemistry that looking at like different ratios of like different types of carbon that existed like centuries ago. That's how you can tell that they've been around for that long. But for other fish, an interesting and very standard way of determining how old they are is fish have these inner ear bones called otoliths, and they're just these bones that are floating in their skulls that help with balance and kind of equilibrium and just knowing where they are relative to like the water column. And those bones, they continue to grow as a fish grows. And so it's kind of like looking at the rings of a tree. If you take an otolith and you look at it under a microscope and kind of shine a light through it, you can count the rings of growth, and you can estimate how old your fish sample or like this specimen was based on that.
Oh, that's
So
so cool.
yeah. So that's how they did it for the shortest lifespan fish, even though I guess they probably could have just waited and see.
I didn't see if they know
But
me.
yeah.
I'm
But
just
a lot of
curious.
fisheries research that where they'd like to know like how old certain fish in different populations are, they'll use like the otolith method as a good
Oh,
method.
that's cool.
The haunting debut album Black Moon by Civic TV provides a cinematic backdrop, a modern-day symphony of the dark and light that is our collective reality. Take a listen to Black Moon, now available via Flemish Eye Records and on all streaming platforms.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Interested in making radio? How about hosting your own show? At CITR, you can make your radio dreams come true by joining a collective. From news, art, sports, to gender empowerment, accessibility, music, and the BIPOC collective, there's definitely something for everyone. Explore new worlds both virtually and at our station, and be prepared to have a blast with some new pals. For more information or to join, please visit citr.ca/get-involved.
So I guess let's just move on to the fish mating topic. Are there any, during your studies or your research, have you come across any bizarre fish mating stories of like some fishes that were really odd to you at first? And, like,
Well, I think there's some cool ones. I know that there's like some fish that the fish that I worked with, they'll kind of like distort the males when they're approaching a female and trying to court them. They'll like kind of distort their body. We call it like a sigmoidal display, where they kind of like turn their body kind of into an S, and then they're kind of, it's almost like, I guess, like when birds like dance to each other, or like a peacock maybe displays its feather, and kind of just in a like, look at me, look at how colorful I am, look at how like, look at how sexy I look kind of thing. And so there are quite a few fish species I think that have those kind of displays, or maybe they'll flare their fins and that kind of thing. One of the coolest ones that I've ever come across, just from like watching the Blue Planet, was the white spotted pufferfish. And what the males do to attract females is they put in the work, man. They build these nests at the bottom of the ocean in the sand, and they're like really beautiful. So when you look at it, it kind of looks like almost like a crop circle.
Oh, wow.
And so it's picture these like this like white sand, and then you see like this kind of shallow depression that's just like in the shape of a perfect circle, kind of maybe like a pothole, but like nicer because it's just sand. And they create that with just by like rubbing their bellies on the sand and like making it a circle. But then what's cool is that like from the center of the circle, they make these grooves with their fins that all like radiate outward. So it almost looks like, I don't know, like rays, like sun rays, or like an interesting plate or whatever, but there's like these like peaks and valleys, or like grooves coming out of the center that just like looks really cool. And it's like very symmetric, very geometric, and like pleasing to the eye. A male white spotted pufferfish will spend like a week doing this and like keep perfecting it and making sure like the lines are smooth or whatever. We're not really sure what the females are looking for, actually. Maybe it's the bigger the circle the better, or maybe it's the right. more grooves the better, or more symmetric, or we're not really sure. I think people are working on that. But then they'll spend a few days like making this nest and then maintaining it, waiting for females to come by. They'll like sit in the middle and like kind of look up at them, and then the females will kind of just cruise by and like be like, like have their pick of, is this nest good enough for my eggs? and then if it is, then that's when mating happens, and they'll also mate by spawning.
Oh my god, I love the men are putting so much work into
Wow. Yeah. at least with this species. Yeah. And I would, if you just look up, I don't know, like pufferfish nest, sand circle, like you'll see them, and they're just really beautiful. And like, it surprised me that it was like a fish, let alone like, or an animal, let alone a fish that did that. So
that sounds, if it's like a very geometrical thing, like that sounds so complicated.
And yeah.
Wow. Is it like the same pattern that they make every single time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not too sure. And I think an interesting question too would be, are they born with the instinct to make this pattern, or do they need to like watch an older fish do it first, or like does it something that gets better over time? I know, so I've worked a little bit with songbirds too, and I guess this is going off on a little bit of a tangent, but definitely like one of the things that we study a lot in songbirds too is how they learn their songs. And certain species, like, they're not born with their ability to sing, and their songs between individuals sound really different. And so if you take like a young juvenile bird and you pair it with an older male, like that bird learns from the older male how to sing their song, and their songs will look very similar. And there's no like, there's no innate or like built in song production there's no built-in song that they learn. So if you don't give it any exposure to like an example song, then it'll just produce gibberish and it'll never like learn how to speak kind of thing. So I don't know if that's the case for these like nest circles, but definitely like some animals do learn their courtship displays, and maybe they change over time and maybe not, but I think it's definitely like a fascinating field of study.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And now that you mentioned your songbird research, I was also looking up on Google trying to find if any fish did that. And there was like I came across this random news article that was talking about a research that was published in Sweden
Oh, cool.
about like I don't know what it was called. It was like singing toadfish. I don't know actually.
Oh yeah. Okay, cool. I think I've heard of that too. I think
Yeah.
it might be like Panamanian or something, and the story was something like these researchers were at the Smithsonian in Panama trying to record like something else, but then like audio of something else, and they're like, "What is this that keeps drowning out our recordings?" And it was like fish mating.
Wow.
And I think there's also, I don't know if this is like their actual name, but there's like a fish called like the drummer fish or something that also makes just like sounds as
Wow.
as a courtship display. So
That's
yeah,
cool.
all kinds of different methods.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, and is it always like, is it majority of them doing all this work? Are they males most of the time, or are they?
that's interesting. I bet that there are some that it's the females that court, just 'cause for fish, like there's always at least like one that like goes against the grain. I guess one of the other ones that like I thought was interesting to bring up was anglerfish mating, which is super messed up. And I don't I guess the in this case the females do the work in some ways. Okay, so let's back up a little bit. So I guess like I think most listeners have probably heard of anglerfish. I think they've been featured in Finding Nemo as well. And so I think like people have an idea of what anglerfish look like. They're these like very honestly very grotesque looking fish that live in the very deep ocean where light doesn't penetrate. They have these like huge like gaping mouths, very sharp teeth. And they have famously that like lure that they have that's like kind of like a rod coming out or an antenna coming out of their head that has like some bioluminescence at the tip to attract prey, et cetera. And so I think that's what most people think of when they think of anglerfish. And for a while, I think for a century since there's a lot of different species of anglerfish too, and like they started to be described, I think, like in the 1800s or something. But for like I think almost 100 years following their discovery, like all the samples that scientists were working with have all been female fish, and it was kind of like a puzzle as to like how come, like where are the males? Like we haven't seen any, like, but also we don't have that many. So is it just coincidence? Is it what? And then there are these other fish that were maybe 2 centimeters long, very small, look nothing like anglerfish that they also fished up, but classified as completely different species because they looked nothing like anglerfish. And turns out that those small, different looking fish were males. And so they just looked so different that they didn't put the two and two together for a little while that they were actually the same species. And circling back to, the females doing the work or whatever. So this is wild. So the male anglerfish are super useless. Like they don't have the antenna. They don't like they're not good at attracting prey or anything. They have a hard time feeding themselves, kind of thing. So a male anglerfish will, based on I think just like odor cues and stuff, find once they're mature, they'll find go and find a female. They are, I think, like less than a tenth of the size of a female, very small compared to their female counterparts. And once they find one, they'll bite onto the belly of the female and they'll just latch onto them. And over time, and they'll latch on and they'll never let go, basically. And then over time, their eyes dissolve or like disintegrate or degenerate, I guess. Their fins disappear, and even some of their organs will degenerate, and their blood supply or like the blood vessels will fuse with that of the female. And so for the rest of its life, it becomes not really its own, like it stops being its own fish or its own individual, and just like becomes like this lump of flesh attached to the female and relies completely on the female for nutrition and to stay alive, basically. And all it does in return is when the female is ready to spawn, it provides sperm, and that's all it does.
Oh,
it's very
it's putting a very disturbing picture in my head.
It's very disturbing. Okay. If you want an even more disturbing picture, a while ago. Okay, so this is still on topic of anglerfish, but there used to be like remember those like shows, old reality shows on like Discovery on like Animal Planet that would be like, what would happen if like a shark fought a tiger? I don't know, or like a shark fought a killer whale or something, and like let's create this, like very 2000s animation to simulate what would happen. And so there's this video that I think is from an Animal Planet show that shows this mating process. But for some reason, instead of animating like two anglerfish doing it, they were like, okay, what would human mating look like if humans mated like anglerfish?
No.
And so if you don't want to sleep tonight, go search up like Animal Planet anglerfish human.
Oh my god.
You'll find like some Reddit threads that have like the gifts.
What would that idea? Video. Who thought that was a good idea to do? Oh my god.
But it's just like the jankiest animation of like a person swimming and then a second like small man going.
Oh my god. Like,
landing on the back of this woman, biting down, and then his like head dissolves into her body. It's wild. It's deeply disturbing.
God, I'm disturbed just hearing about it. Yeah, oh my god. Yeah.
It really left an impression on me because I think I saw it a long time ago, and then when I was thinking about weird fish sex to bring up, I was like, definitely this one, because it really traumatized me.
Why did they need it to make it never mind, honestly. Yeah. I might need to go look that up because
yeah.
I don't know myself, but yeah, I think that's really funny though that they did that. And I think we kind of like, going off the song fish thing that I was talking about,
yeah.
It also said that if there's like, because the males will like hum a song to attract the females, mm-hmm. but like if there's noise pollution or something, the females will get distracted
and yeah.
it won't happen. I'm like, that's yeah. kind of interesting. But like, what do they mean? Do you know what they mean by noise pollution?
Yeah, definitely. So it's a very, very big deal for marine and more so marine, but starting freshwater conservation in general. There's a lot of noise underwater from boats, from right. offshore oil rigs being drilled, and just lots of human activity. And it's just getting worse. We're relying more and more on ocean liners and shipping and boats for all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And the ocean environment in general, it's like a sense of smell isn't super like isn't maybe as important compared to terrestrial animals, maybe because smell, it kind of just like dissipates mm. or gets diluted very fast in the water. Definitely some animals do use smell, like sharks, etc. But sound is a really good medium for communication for fish, for whales, for a lot of different marine animals, because water is just a good medium for sound to travel, and it can travel far. And so a lot of animals rely on sound, especially in oceans and in rivers and lakes for communication. And because of increased human activity, including shipping, including all sorts of offshore development, mm-hmm. that it can be really tough for animals to who need to communicate to hear each other. So it doesn't surprise me that is like a growing concern for our toadfish friends. It's definitely a big concern in the marine mammal world, where like dolphins and whales definitely communicate through like clicks, through whistles, and especially like between mothers and calves. You can't always you also can't always see very well in the water. It's often very turbid or like murky, and so yes, sound is relied upon a lot for communication. And so, because your other senses are kind of dampened in a lot of cases in the ocean. And so sound in the water kind of creates like an acoustic fog, much like fog would be like, would really mess up your visibility. And so if you really rely on sound to like stick together with your group, your social animal or to mate, et cetera, sound pollution is a big problem.
I see. Okay. That's interesting to know, and just, yeah, tells you more about how humans suck.
And, another kind of pollution.
And so kind of moving on to, like, we've been talking a lot about males and females.
Yeah.
So now my question is, like, is there any asexual or unisexual fishes that don't require male females or don't need male females?
Yeah, sure are. Good question, Trish. So again, with fish, there are some exceptions to this rule, where, you know, most animals reproduce sexually with a male and a female. One type of fish that is not asexual, let me back up and restart. Okay, so there's a fish called the mangrove killifish that I think lives in South America. It's a freshwater fish, and this is one fish that each individual has both male and female reproductive organs, and so it's still sexual reproduction, because it still reproduces using sperm and eggs, except it's just one fish that produces both of them. And so it can reproduce with itself.
Wow.
And I think, so basically the progeny or like the offspring that they produce like are pretty much identical to the parent. And I was gonna say, I want to say like the mother or father, but it's the parent, because it's, yeah. it's both. They can like kind of cross bond like between each other too. But like the option is there if they wanted to, if they wanted to reproduce on their own, they can do it. And I think they do that by spawning too. So the same fish will release eggs and then release sperm to fertilize them. And so, yeah, so that's kind of like, I don't really know what to call it, because it's definitely like, it's still sexual production, because you still have both parts, but it's from one individual. So that's kind of bizarre. And then there's another South American fish called the Amazon Molly. And this is a species where all the fish are female, and all like the offspring. Yes.
We love that.
Yeah, love that for them. All the offspring are genetic clones of their mothers. And I think they technically, so I'm not really sure like what the actual mechanism of this process is. So it seems like they technically trick another species, like males from another species of fish, to mate with them. And so to start off like fertilization, they need sperm to like touch the egg, but it's considered asexual reproduction, because once like the embryo develops, like none of the male DNA is part of the embryo. So that like kind of messes with everything that I like learned in my biology classes. So I'm not sure beyond that how it works, but they fit into that definition of asexual, where the offspring are full clones of the mother, and it only uses the mother's DNA, and the mother only has like female sex organs. And what's interesting about like the fact that these fish exist is that it's a bit of an evolutionary puzzle, because like classic evolutionary theory says, okay, like sexual reproduction is really important, like because like for genetic diversity reasons, and you want like a diverse gene pool for, so that when the environment changes, or like you need to adapt, the species needs to adapt to like different situations, you have that variety in your population, and that some of your population will be able to adapt because they have different genes and different strengths or whatever. But with these fish, they literally just reproduce clones of themselves. So how is it that not only are they surviving, and it seems like they've survived for a long time, but it seems like they're also thriving, yeah. in a time where like a lot of species are having a lot of trouble because of like anthropogenic factors, so, or like human-made factors. So that, and this was like a conversation that I think started like recently in 2018, which when we discovered that this is what was going on with these fish. So once again, fish throwing a wrench into just basic biological theory.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
That's completely bizarre. Yeah, I need to forget everything I learned about in my biology classes that I took in high school. Wow.
Yeah. Learn about fish and then you realize that there's an exception to everything. Yeah. But yeah, and that's not to say that like the entire population is like, there's still genetic variety within the population, but it's just every time they reproduce, the offspring of a certain individual is going to be cloned. So it's hard to introduce more genetic diversity than what already exists.
That's so interesting. Oh my God. So, wow, thank you Raina for sharing that. Another last question that I have for you is that I read that you're working on, well, I guess you're working on or worked on, like, recently, the how fishes learn about novel dangers in their environment. Which,
oh wow, yeah, you really did your research.
I don't look at your website, but yeah, that sounds really cool. Have you found anything cool about that, or that you would like to share?
Yeah, I guess so in general, I did my master's on how fish learn about novel dangers, and in general, like fish cognition, fish social behavior, and specifically like how fish socially learn. And often when I tell people that, people will be like, wait, aren't fish kind of stupid? Like, how is it that they learn? I kind of get it, right? Because like we think of learning as something that is very complicated. Yeah. But I guess if you like really break down, like what is learning? Learning just means like changing your behavior based on new information that you see in your environment. So for example, I guess like, let's say I'm walking down the street and I see like a shiny patch on the street. Maybe I've never seen ice before. And I'm like, let me just keep walking. Bam, like I slip and I hurt myself. Well, maybe next time, like from this experience, like now I know to like look out for these visual cues, like the shiny patch on the street. And maybe next time I will have learned and I'll have remembered from my experience that not to walk on ice. But another way that this can happen is, and this is gonna come back to fish soon, but another way that this can happen is, what if like, I don't know anything about ice, but I see someone walking in front of me and they slip on ice and they hurt themselves. And then I can learn without like having to put myself in danger to avoid that spot. And so that's just like a very basic example of like what we call like learning socially or social learning. And so my research was looking at like how fish do the same thing. And so fish in the wild, and we reproduced it in the laboratory, can also learn from other fish kind of in their environment about new dangers, new predators, things to avoid. And so I don't know if you want to go into more detail, but
yeah, so they just learn from each other, just looking at each other. And
And so if they see that, I don't know, like Bob over there is looking like showing a stressed response, he's freezing, he's going and hiding in shelter, Barbara will like look around and be like, okay, why is Bob doing that? First of all, I'm going to do that too, because like if Bob, maybe Bob knows something that I don't know. And then if, for example, Barbara also sees like a new predator that she hasn't seen before, or maybe just something in her environment that maybe is new to her, she might associate this fear response that Bob showed with maybe like a novel predator, and that's how they learn to adapt like over their lifetimes to novel threats. And so I did some work with that, and we looked at kind of like we showed that fish can do that, and I looked at some different brain areas that might be involved in that kind of learning. And we saw that, in fact, like there was some overlap between the way that fish brains work in this learning context and what we know about like how mouse brains work in mammals. And so just to show that like even these concepts that seem kind of complicated and seem very like mammalian, we can find examples of that in species like fish.
That's super cool. I love fish now.
I'm so glad.
And I guess is there any other fact or some information, random information about social behavior that you would like to share, or does that cover it all?
I think that pretty much covers it. One thing that we haven't talked about is that some fish can change sex, and that depends a little bit on social environment. So I guess just very quickly, there's a species called the California sheephead that lives off in the kelp forests off California.
Right.
And all of them are born female, but then under certain conditions, once they get big enough and there's not too much like other males like that are already nearby, because they're very territorial, then they'll turn into males, and then they're male for the rest of their life. So that's honestly, I think that's super super cool.
Oh my god. So like, oh yeah, so it's just like condition based, so like they are okay. Never mind. I was going to say something, but then I remembered that it was condition-based.
It depends on like what their social environment. Well, at first they have to get big enough, but also depends on if there are other males and like the composition of like the population that they're living in.
Yeah. That sounds so cool. Oh my god. Yeah. Now I just want to research fishes. I'm going to abandon my international relations degree. But yeah, that sounds super cool. I think that covers it all. I don't have any more questions.
Yeah. Thanks so much for talking about fish with me.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for coming on and taking your time to talk to us. It's just me. Talk to me. But yeah. So that's our show today, folks. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Against the Current by CITR News, and we are here every Thursday at 3 p.m. bringing you local news. And stay tuned for more amazing programming.